Back with you this afternoon. Let's open our Bibles to Acts chapter 19. Let's continue our look at Luke giving us the story of how the gospel succeeded in a world of variation, various cultures, various problems, problem areas, various societies of either Jew, Gentile, or a combination. Paganism, running into the occult. How does the gospel run into all of these different cultures of thought? And how does it survive all of those different things? So at Ephesus, we saw that the gospel successfully confronted those who knew only the baptism of John and brought about some conversions because of the truth. The truth stands. And when people realize the truth, they give up long-standing, even though sincerely believed, traditions. They give those up when they understand the truth and they understand the value of truth. We saw also that as Paul would go from place to place, Ephesus no exception, he would go in the synagogues and he would try to reason from the Jews, with the Jews, from their own scripture, proving that Jesus is the Christ from their own scriptures. He was the one that fit the prophetic word that we were talking about this morning. We also saw the gospel come into Ephesus and confront not only Judaism and then bring about some converts from there, but also confronts the occult, the magical arts, witchcraft, sorcery. Those kinds of things were confronted so that when people realized the truth, they began to pile their books on the occult, pile them up and burn them. And we left off there in our study last week, so we're going to pick up at about verse 21. So leaving off there, the gospel was very successful. Verse 20 says, the word of the Lord grew mightily and prevailed. Prevailed against all of these opposing viewpoints. The gospel stood above them all. The truth is Jesus really is the Christ. The evidence is for him that he is the Son of God. And his resurrection is the strong case, the rock on which the church was able to survive all of its enemies. But now we're going to confront another problem at Ephesus. So we saw Judaism in the synagogue. We saw the magical arts and sorcery and the casting out of demons. And now we're seeing a riot form, because what's going to happen now, sometimes we join together the occult and idolatry. Sometimes they do go together, but sometimes they are separate from one another in some ways. And so we're moving from confronting the occult to the confrontation of idolatry, especially the main one of the time and region was the goddess Diana of the Ephesians, or in another language, she was referred to as Artemis of the Ephesians. So you may have a version that says Diana. You may have one that says Artemis. This will be the next confrontation of Paul. All right, starting now with Paul's third journey then, the miracles we saw. He sends, in verse 21, Timothy. He's going to send him away, Timothy and Erastus, going to be sent to Macedonia. When these things were accomplished, Paul purposed in spirit when he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia. When I get through with Macedonia and Achaia, I want to go back to Jerusalem. And he says, after I've been there, I want to go to Rome. So he's got two missions in two different directions from where he is now. I want to go back to Jerusalem, and I want to go back to Rome. He's in between both of those places. Now we wonder sometimes then in this context, why did he want to set his eyes on going to Jerusalem? And if you'll recall, he had encouraged brethren to gather together their contributions for the poor saints. And remember, it had been prophesied that there would be a famine in the land. And so that famine was hitting in the region of Jerusalem for some time. And it could be at this point in time, because of his concern of what is happening in Judea and Jerusalem regarding the famine, that he was wanting to get brethren everywhere he could to get their funds together and send to relieve the needy saints in those areas. You'll see that's why some people believe that if we could look at, sort all the facts out from the letters and from this particular text, that it is believed that Paul must have written the first Corinthian letter, the letter to the Corinthians from Ephesus at this point. He wrote two letters, in fact. One is mentioned in 1 Corinthians 5:9, where he says, I had written to you previously not to keep company with fornicators. And so he had written one that we don't have it as an inspired book, but he had written apparently a personal note in regard to that. And then he wrote 1 Corinthians, the one that is inspired, that was to be read by all the brethren and was to be distributed among all the churches. So he writes 1 Corinthians, and he sends, verse 22, he sent into Macedonia those who ministered to him, Timothy and Erastus, but he himself stayed in Asia for a while. Now, in the 1 Corinthian letter, he was telling the brethren in chapter 16 that on the first day of the week, when they come together, that on the first day of the week, they were to gather their funds together and have them ready so that when he does come, they will have their funds ready and he could carry them on to Jerusalem. He had also written brethren in Rome. He had told brethren in Galatia, apparently by word of mouth, as I had given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do you. He's trying to raise these funds for the needy saints in Jerusalem. And so it seems he has set his focus on getting that mission accomplished. Now he sends them, Timothy and Erastus, ahead of time. But now starting with verse 23, we're going to see how the gospel confronted idolatry once again, but now in the region of Ephesus. It says, about that time there arose a great commotion about the way. The way. We've run into that term several times, or we will this time and several other times. The way that we're talking about is the way of Jesus Christ. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. You come to the Father through me. So I am the way to the Father. I am the way to salvation. People who are Christians then are in the way. That is, they're on the way that goes to heaven. We want to be sure that we're in that way, the only way to heaven, and that's through Jesus Christ. Well, the way just doesn't sit there and minds its own business and doesn't affect people. It does. If you're standing for truth, people are going to find out what you stand for. If you're in the way, you think you're right then, don't you? And they will assume then, well, if you think you're right, then you're saying I'm wrong. People just naturally get defensive because you think that there's just one way. And there is just one way. You're right about that, but people don't like to believe that because they like to think that everybody's going to heaven their own way and everybody's got a different way of getting there, and they don't like it when somebody thinks, no, there's just one way and everybody better get on that one way. So there was a great commotion about the way. For a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith. Now we notice the occult people burning their books, and so it's going to naturally flow into, well, if you think you're right and the occult is wrong, then naturally you think we're wrong too, don't you? So he was a silversmith. It says he made silver shrines of Diana or Artemis. He brought no small profit to the craftsmen. Those that would help mold those images sold them. Some people had their own personal model, their own personal one they could carry home and set up on their mantle, so to speak. And they could bow down at home to Artemis. They could show their great respect to that particular god, but you had to buy them. You had to buy one, and that was a money-making scheme. Well, once you tell the truth that there is only one God and you can't form and fashion an image of Him, He's not made with hands, He's the one that makes everything, then once you start telling that and the light bulb comes on in people's mind, well, if you're saying that you can't create an image, then you're saying we're wrong because we've got an image. And you'd be telling people that it's wrong to buy one of our images, wouldn't you? And of course, a Christian would have to say, well, it's not based on any kind of truth. And people that said, well, I'm offended. So there was a great commotion now being stirred in Ephesus, and the church is going to feel the effects of that. And Demetrius is kind of leading the way, building up the prejudice and the hate talk against the Lord's people, because people, when you start affecting their pocketbook, that's the last straw. I'll tolerate a lot of things, but when you start teaching in such a way that affects our pocketbook, then that's the last straw. We're not putting up with that. They would put up with all kind of religions in their area as long as the religion said nothing about idolatry and the foolishness of it. He called them together. He called all these craftsmen together, and he and the workers of similar occupation, and said, men, you know that we have our prosperity by this trade. Moreover, you see and hear that not only in Ephesus, but throughout almost all Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away many people. You remember, as he was traveling on those first two journeys, he would run into places in all of Asia, chapter 14 in particular, where they were going to make Paul a god because they said, man, look at the miracles. He must be God come down from heaven. And they were going to worship him. And he says, no, don't, absolutely not. I'm just a man. There is one true and living God. Well, he's been persuading people across Asia that idolatry is wrong. He's been persuading and turning many people away from idolatry, and that affects the pocketbooks of those who were skilled in making those idols. And Paul's been saying that there are no gods which are made with hands. Of course, that's right. If you make it with your hand, that can't be God. That ought to be common sense. But in that culture, You grew up and everybody says there is something miraculous and powerful about this statue here, and he hears and he can do something about your life. Of course, it was all superstition, and sometimes they would have a great big temple and a great big model of one. I don't know if you've been to the Parthenon in Nashville, Tennessee, but you walk in there, it's a replica, a smaller replica of the Parthenon in Athens, Greece. But you walk in there and you see this monstrosity of an image, and you say, wow, well, I can understand how they could become superstitious with that big image there. And especially if everybody's talking the talk that there's something miraculous or something powerful about it. So he says here that these men are really telling people there are no gods. Well, that's what the true and living God had said all along. He says, don't make any graven images. There's just one God. You should worship only the true and living God. He's the one that is invisible to your eyes now. But he's the one that created everything. You don't make images to the true and living God. There's nothing you can compare him to. Isaiah would say he's greater than anything that you could imagine with your small mind. You cannot imagine him. You cannot make him with your hands. And it is foolish to fall down to something that was made by human hands. Human hands has to keep him polished, keep him dusted, and if he falls over and breaks, you have to put him back together again. Humans have to use their hands because he can't have hands that actually work. So, Demetrius goes on and says, so not only is this trade of ours in danger of falling into disrepute, in other words, you won't be taking home money anymore, but also, we've got this great big temple. The temple of the great goddess Diana or Artemis. People are going to start looking at that and they're going to not come to that temple and respect Diana or Artemis anymore. And her magnificence will be destroyed. Whom all Asia and the world, everybody knows that you're supposed to worship Diana. And if this man keeps talking and people keep listening, they're going to quit coming. And so not only do we lose income, but this temple becomes very useless as well. And when they heard this, they were full of wrath. You stir up people based upon their emotions. And that's really the thing that stirs up people today, isn't it? It's emotion. You get them on an emotional high. You can get them angry at something. It can be real or it can be imagined. Most of the time it's imagination. But they get full of wrath. They start getting into this mob mentality. And he says here, and the people just started getting so emotional about this. We cannot allow this to happen. And they started shouting, going through the streets. Great! Great is Diana of the Ephesians. And you can hear hundreds of voices joining in. Thousands of voices now joining in. And all this echoing around the city. And they go, it goes on for 2 hours. People saying, shouting. They're not reasoning. They're not using their intellect and looking at evidence. They're just using their emotions and stirring their emotions up. When you do that, you're not going to make good decisions about life. And they're not making good decisions because what they're worried about is their income, and they're worried about the reputation of their goddess, Diana, and the great temple and all that the money that went into building that up. And when they heard this, they were upset, cried, saying, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." So the whole city was filled with confusion and rushed into the theater. That theater is still there, incidentally, and I'll show a couple of pictures of that in just a minute. Rushed into the theater with one accord, having seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companions. They seized them. And when Paul wanted to go into the people, the disciples kind of hold back Paul. No, you don't need to go in there. So they wouldn't allow him. So the theater, people are rushing into the theater. They've grabbed up two disciples, and Paul is not in the theater yet. When Paul wanted to go, the disciples would not allow him. And then some of the officials of Asia who were his friends sent to him pleading that he would not venture into the theater. Don't go in there. They're so angry they'd probably tear him from limb to limb. Some therefore cried one thing, some another, for the assembly was confused, and most of them did not know why they'd come together. It's just like, everybody's going there, let's go. Everybody's talking about how great Diana. Maybe some of them got in line and got in the crowd and worked their way, because maybe this is about a special ceremony for Diana of the Ephesians. Far as they knew, they just didn't know. Why are we all going and rushing into the theater? Some knew and some didn't, but he says a lot of them just didn't know why they had come. That happens quite often even today. People join a crowd, don't even know what it's about. They drew Alexander out of the multitude, the Jews putting him forward, and Alexander with his hand, motioned with his hand, and wanted to make his defense to the people. But when they found out that he was a Jew, well, he's not going to be saying anything favorably to our goddess Diana. So when they found out that, they're not wanting to hear information. They're not seeking truth. They're just wanting people around them to keep buttressing their devotion to Diana of the Ephesians. And he says here, they found out he was Jew. All of them, one voice cried out for about 2 hours. So bringing a Jew forward to say something to this crowd was not going to do anything to settle them down. So certainly, if Paul, another Jew, but in this case he's a Christian, he's not going to be able to settle that crowd down either. And so they're just shouting for 2 solid hours. "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." We're not going to hear anything else. If you're not on board to say, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians," we don't want to hear from you. Well, the city clerk came in. Now that man has some official capacity. He can call for Roman soldiers. He can do something about this crowd. So the city clerk says, calm down. Let me get your attention. He says, "Men of Ephesus, what man is there who does not know that the city of the Ephesians is temple guardian of the great goddess Diana, and of the image which fell down from Zeus?" That's their explanation where it came from. It fell down from Zeus. Everybody knows that. It's kind of like he's confirmed that I'm on your side. "Therefore, Since these things cannot be denied, you ought to be quiet and do nothing rashly. Of course, they could be denied, but they didn't want to hear a denial of those things. And so if you're not going to hear it, there's somebody that could tell you the truth, but if you're not willing to hear it, then it's going to do no good. It's going to go in one area. It's just going to stir up the anger even more. He says, "For you have brought these men here who are neither robbers of temples." They didn't go in your temple and rob anything, did they? No. Did they say anything about your goddess? Did they use words that said, "Diana is not great"? Did they blaspheme your goddess? Well, no, they just said that there is one God. Now, necessary inference could say, yeah, this is not speaking good about our God. They just didn't speak anything about your God. They just said there's one true and living God. So if it's not about robbing your temple, they didn't do that. They didn't blaspheme your goddess. Therefore, if Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen have a case against anyone, the courts are open. And there are proconsuls. They can go in and get their lawful advice from lawyers and counselors. And let them bring charges. If there's some charge against somebody, bring it to court. But if you have any other inquiry to make, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly. A lawful assembly is not based on emotion. When you have a lawful assembly, you hear both sides. You let the jury weigh the evidence that's been presented in a lawful assembly so that a fair conclusion can be brought. We're not going to have this business of stirring up a mob and doing what you're doing right now, is what the city clerk said. And that's quite wise. They'd seen emotional outbreaks many times before. And they knew that's why you need to have a civilized government in place. Otherwise, if it's not run by a civilized government, then what's going to happen is unlawfulness and rioting. All of that's going to happen. And nobody's going to be able to live in peace. So he says, we're going to have to do this in a lawful assembly. So what we see Demetrius doing is stirring up the crowd and a riot breaking out. The lecture of Demetrius is that they're troublers. They're going to mess up our whole craftsmanship, our whole livelihood, and the temple of the great goddess Diana is going to fall into disrepute. And now we come to the hysteria of the crowd and the cry of the mob and the confusion of the mob and many rushing there not even knowing why. And the logic of the mayor of the town saying, "Hope, calm down." The divinity of the statue, he affirmed. Everybody knows that. But these men didn't say anything against this statue of yours. They didn't rob your temple or anything. Then in verse 37, he says, "You brought these men here who are neither robbers of temples nor blasphemers." Just be honest about that. Our law will do something about robbers of temples. Our law will do something about those who are blaspheming. But our law is not going to do something just because somebody brings in another religious idea and claims that that's the only God. Now, we're not going to do that on a religious basis. Therefore, he says, bring it to a lawful assembly. If we are in danger of, for we are in danger, verse 40, of being called in question for today's uproar. In other words, I'm just the city clerk or the mayor, but there are those officials higher up than me, and they're not going to approve of this kind of an outbreak in our city. He says there's been no reason which we may give to account for this disorderly gathering. Orderly gatherings are fine, but disorderly gatherings are not. So it's not a legal matter. If it's not a legal matter, then it does not need to go on. And he talks about the possibility of us getting in bigger trouble. And when he had said these things, he dismissed the assembly. He said, just go back. Go back to what you were doing. I'm dismissing this crowd. All right, so what do we see in all of that? Well, here's a picture of the way the temple or the theater looks now. Of course, it was a lot nicer than that. It's run down, of course. You can see some of the remains of that theater. So, okay, see my red dot? The coastline is out this way. There's a street. And on either side, you can see the remains of at least some of the columns that lined that major street. So a lot of the craftsmen would have probably been up this street. And as they were stirring up emotions, people would make their way down into the theater area and were shouting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians," or Artemis. And this kind of gives you a visual of that particular area. It would, of course, have looked a lot nicer than that, but that's the way it was. This is an angle on another side street that leads up to the big library. We have the remains of their huge library. You can go visit that even today. Here's where the Temple of Artemis once stood. It's fallen into even worse ruins than the other things. But this was Diana or Artemis, and this is where the great temple once stood. You can see a lot of the foundation stones around that, and at least one column is still remaining. But it was a huge, beautiful, almost like the Parthenon kind of looking building. And so you get an idea that if you were to go there, you could still see the remains of where Paul visited when he was at Ephesus. You would see the scenes, and you'd be able to visualize more clearly some of this. This Brother Farrell Jenkins pointing out a marker has been found mentioning Erastus on that marker. So all of these names, these images, the theater, all of that's real stuff. We're talking about reality. We're talking about Luke saying, here's what happened in these places. And here are some of the people that actually were there during this time. And so we're finding archaeological evidence. Yeah, some of the names of people, famous people, are still there. This is not a book of mythology. That is, it's made up as somebody else's myth. No, this is Luke trying to be careful to lay out what happened in an historical context and telling us the details of when the truth of the gospel comes into a city that is full of idolatry and worshiping of idols, that sometimes you get to a point where the idolaters get so emotional that they hate the way. They hate those who would say that there is only one way. They hate those who say there is only one true and living God, and you can't make a physical image with your hands to represent Him. All of that to say the gospel continues to march on, even though at points in time people will get upset with the truth. Don't let that bother you. Rejoice that you have the truth And when one door closes, you go find another door, because that's exactly what Luke is saying in this book that the apostles did. When they found one door closed, they left and went to find another door that may be open. Okay. Let's get our song books. If you've never obeyed the gospel, I hope you see in all of this the power of the gospel, and I hope you see the truth of it. You know you need what Jesus is offering you. If you want to repent of your sins, confess your faith and be baptized, and we can help you with that. Or if you've fallen, need to correct things in a public way, and we can help you with that. Please come now and let your wishes be made known as we stand together and sing this song.